Okay, Parshas Vayeshev. Perek Lamed Ches Pasuk Aleph says, "Vayiba Yisehi Vayird Yehuda Meizachav Vayit Ad Isha Dulam Yishmo Chira." Was at that time Yehuda went down from his brothers and he turned to an Isha Dulami, a man from Adulam, and his name was Chira. Pasuk Beis Vayarsham Yehuda Vasish Kanani. Yehuda saw there the daughter of a Kanani man, Ushmo Shua. The name of that Kanani man was Shua. So he took his daughter Yikachel. He took that daughter as a wife, Vayavoila, and he was together with her. So Rashi says Yehuda became a partner with Chira in some type of business, spent a lot of time with him away from his brothers, which seemingly caused him to hang out with his people, Chira's people, eventually leading him to marry another merchant's daughter, you know, somebody who was out there. This was without a question a Yerida. And for that reason, the Parsha starts off with the word Vayered. It was Yerida for Yehuda to have gone to other people instead of hanging out with his brothers with the Shvatim. Who was this man Chira? So the Medrash Rabbah and Pehei brings two opinions. The Rabbanan say this is the same person as Chiram, the king of Tzur, who helped Shlomo Melech build the Beis HaMikdash. The crazy thing about this Medrash is that that means that he lived for almost 1,100 years altogether. Rabbi Yehuda, son of Rabbi Simon, says he only lived for 500 years. That's it. He only lived for 500 years. Chiram, the king of Tzur, was somebody else entirely. Either way, both opinions of the Medrash was either that he lived for 1,100 years or 500 years. If he's 1,100 years and you're dealing with the oldest person of all time, older than Mesushalach in 969, that's what we're dealing with. But even so, we're talking about somebody who was at least 500, according to this idea of the Medrash. Now, what happened to him? And then you get a machlokas midrashim. Derech Eretz Zuta, which is a small little masechta at the end of the first parak, says that he went to Gan Eden alive, that he's one of the nine people who went to Gan Eden alive. But it could be, there's another Medrash Yecheskel that says he was punished very badly for his terrible pride and his ego. He was killed by Nebuchadnezzar by having his flesh stripped off of his body, and he ate it until he died, which is absolutely disgusting. But that's the idea. It says that's the Rabbanan, that's Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Simon, and then what happened to him to the end of the day. But that's Chira Melech Tzur, not Chira. Was Chira Chiram? It's possible. One opinion says yes, one opinion says no. So the Torah Shlomo says it seems that every Rishon Acharon take this Medrash to be literal, that Chira lived either 500 or 1,100 years. But there is a Hadr Zakenim. Hadr Zakenim is a Baal Tosos that says that Chira and Chiram were from the same family. And the love that Chira had for Shevet Yehuda lasted the 500 or 1,100 years until Chiram, the king of Tzur, when he took over and built the Beis HaMikdash. So he doesn't believe that the words 1,100 and 500 are from the Medrash itself. It seems that it was added on by someone who says, and it seems that he lived for 1,100 years, etc. There's some other things in the Baal HaTosfos over there about the Yudin being Mitsuyanin over here. I don't know what he's talking about. The Baal HaTosfos say that the word Adulami appears three words over here. Adulami, Ha'adulami, Ha'adulami, because the gematria of all three plus those two hays is the same as Shlomo Melech. If you add on the two words, it's 472. Shlomo Melech is 472. If you add on the two words, Adulami, Ha'adulami, Ha'adulami is 472, because this Ha'adulami was the same person who worked for Shlomo Melech altogether. That's what the Baal HaTosfos say over here. Again, if it wasn't the same person, if Chira is not Chiram, then it just means that the family continued all the way to the times of Shlomo Melech. The Netziv doesn't understand why the name is brought up at all. Who cares who Chira was? Chira doesn't add a single thing to the story, and we very well could have said that a messenger tried to bring his gift to Tamar later on. What does Chira have to do with anything? What's the pshat? So he says, it's a mashal to the future. In order for great things to happen, great people from other nations are going to be involved. We'll call this Maisav Osim Labanim. Chiram helped build the first Beis HaMikdash. Darius II helped build the second Beis HaMikdash. And I know Darius II might have been Jewish because he might have been Esther's kid. Let's assume that he wasn't. And number three, right, the third Beis HaMikdash, when Mashiach comes in the future, it seems that the kings of the world will help him gain popularity and do what he needs to do. See Yeshayah, Perek Mem Tes, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Right, it seems that all the nations of the world are going to be helping over here. And so too, says the Nativ, that's why Chira over here was the one who helped Yehuda. He's the pshat. We're trying to show you what it's going to be like in the future, and that's the reason why we bring him up here. On the other hand, the Shach says that this was a great-grandchild of Cain, not literally a great-grandchild. I don't even know if it went literally, because the only person who could possibly be that way is Naamah. Naamah is the only person who could have survived from the family of Cain. If Naamah is the Naamah who's the sister of Tuval, Cain, etc., right, and you know, and goes through that family, if she survived and then she married Noah, there's another opinion that Naamah was somebody else entirely. But if it was, right, then he's from Cain in theory, I guess, in some way, although technically everybody's from Cain. Either way, the reason why is because Adulami are the letters of Al-Dameh, because of the blood vav that he had spilled. And Adulami is a gematria of Kayin if you add on the vav. Kayin had killed his brother, and Yehuda had now done the same in his mind by selling Yosef. So they connected to one another. The two kids had the stain of Kayin upon them, that's why they died. Says the Shach, that's what it means, that he was connected to Kayin. The Chira was connected to Kayin over here. And that's the reason why he was connected to Yehuda. The Chassam Sofer says there's one thing that Chira can be blamed for. If you have a friend who's doing something stupid, you immediately go up to him and tell him, stop it. You grab him away from that thing and you tell him, that's not what you should be doing right now. You don't deserve to be in that position. That's not what you should be doing right now. That's what you do to a good friend. Chira saw Yehuda turn off the road to talk to the Zona that was there. He should have immediately stopped him. He should have said to Yehuda, this is beneath your honor. You're a king. You don't belong over here. Get away from that person. Any one of his brothers would have done so. The Shvatim would have been there. And that's the reason why there's no Yichud by two people that are Chashuv. There's no Halacha of Yichud, but Chira didn't. That tells us what kind of a person he was. He was a good friend. He was a terrible influence. And that's the Pshat behind Chira. And that's why Yehuda went down because of it. It's the type of person who, look, you want to be friends? You're friends. But no, the influence is the worst you could have. Now, who is Shua? Who is this guy Shua, whose daughter Yehuda married? So the Rokeach says the word Shum. Vayar Shum Yehuda is added on here to tell you what Yehuda saw. He saw that she was very tzenua. And as soon as he got to her area, he saw that this woman was a tremendous person. He felt that was a simen tov. Oh, wow, I found somebody who was like that. And he wanted to marry her because of it. So it wasn't really about Shua, says the Rokeach. It's really about her. The Baalei Tosfos say both he and Chira were tzaddikim, since it says their name after the word Shem is used. So sometimes it says the word like Paro Shmo. Well, that means that Paro is evil. But if it says Shmo Chira, Shmo Shua, the name before the actual name itself, Shmo Shua, Shmo Chira, that's how we know that somebody is a tzaddik. And that's why Yehuda hung out with them, married into their families, because they were tzaddikim in that way. The Shari Aron says Shua means he was very generous with his money, right? We see an Eov, the Pasuk below Nikar Shua Lifnei Dal. The Shua, right, is not recognized as something bad in front of a poor person, which shows he was very chush of a person. The Medrash Rabbah says he was Botzinat Asrei, the greatest person in the light of the city, the greatest person in that city, which means it could be that he was the best person there. The Barav HaSadeh says it means he never worshipped idols, which again, that's pretty special for that time. They didn't worship any idols. But Yaakov Kamenetsky says this was exactly Yehuda's Hatter. This wasn't just another guy. He was very Chashuv. Therefore, I should be allowed to marry his Chashuv daughter. That's the idea behind it over here. Now, what about the problem that he was a Kenani? So Targum Onkelos and Targum Yonason both translate the word Kenani as Tagar, as a merchant. So it's clear they both held that Shua was a merchant, not an actual Kenani man. Rashi says the same, as well as the Radak. They both say the exact same way. Not only that, but you also see this in the Rashbam and the Chizkuni. They said they were supposed to stay away from Kenani woman. And they bring examples that Kenani means a merchant. In Hoshea, Yud Beis Ches, Kenan Biado Mosne Mirmo, Yeshaya, Chav Kimol Ches, Kenanea Nichbedei Aretz. And that's that. And the Orach Chaim says a possible proof that she wasn't a Kenani woman is that the Pasuk says he was a Kenani. Sounds like she was not. Well, why not? Wasn't she her kid, his kid? So if he was a Kenani, then it must be that she was as well. Must be that he was a merchant and she was not a merchant. And that's the point, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Had the Pasuk wanted to tell us he had done something wrong by marrying her, it would have been more straightforward. You would have married a Kenani woman. And then everybody would have said, oh, I got it. And that would be that way. It could even be it's a Gilui Milsa, he says. That it's not going to be that way. We're going to have a problem with this later on, but it seems pretty clear, right, that that's the idea, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that this is referring to a merchant. So we got, again, Targum Onkelos, Targum Yonason. We have Rashi, we have the Radak, we have Rashbam, we have the Chizkuni, and the Or HaChaim. Now, the reason why I'm not bringing up the Ramban yet is because we're going to get to that in a second. Now, why wouldn't they? All of this is based on a Gemara Pesachim Daf Nun. Gemara Nun says, how do we know it wasn't actually a Kenani woman? Maybe she was an actual Kenani woman. The Gemara answers, since Avraham Avinu told his son Yitzchak, I don't want you to marry a Kenani woman, and Yitzchak and Rivka told Yaakov to stay away from them as well, it seems likely that Yaakov would have warned his children to stay the same. If the Avos did this, they said that they shouldn't marry a Kenani woman, then it makes sense that Yehuda never would have married a Kenani woman. Says the Gemara, must be that she's not a Kenani woman. She was the daughter of a merchant. Why wouldn't they want to marry a woman of Kenani descent? Well, Rashi says, Parshas Noach says that she was cursed. All of Kenanim were cursed to be avadim to Yafes and to Shem. It seems that they wanted to stay away from a cursed nation. They didn't want to be together with slaves. It could also be that the Avos didn't want to marry anyone whose parents would be around and would have any influence over their children. Nobody wants to keep Christmas and Hanukkah. Why would you want that? So they said, I'm not going to allow that. And that both reasons would apply for the Shvatim. They shouldn't marry into the Kanani nation. And that makes sense over here. Now, here's the problem. Rashi in Lamed Zayin Lamed Hey, and it's just a few psukim earlier, just two psukim earlier, brings the opinion of Rabbi Nechemya that the daughters of Yaakov who came to console him were actually Kanani women. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Shvatim married their sisters. But Rabbi Nechemya says they actually married Kanani women who were married, and that's what they got married to. Now, hold on. That means not just Yehuda married Kanani women. All of the Shvatim married Kanani women. So the Sifsei Chachamim answers, no. It could be that those women were children of Kanani women who had married other men. So their children, because by Goyim you go by the father, it's patrilineal descent, not matrilineal descent. Their children would technically not be called Kananim. This woman that Yehuda married was without a question a Kanani man's daughter. So it's different. Rabbi Nechemya said they married Kanani woman. But they didn't marry actual Kanani woman. They married Kanani woman's daughters who were married to other people, and therefore they were technically not Kanani woman. But this guy, Shua, was for sure a Kanani man. So Yehuda definitely married a Kanani man's daughter. And that's why we're going on so crazy about this guy, right, about Yehuda, right, as opposed to the other Shvatim. And the Nachas Yaakov answers, even Rabbi Nechemya would agree with this. Yehuda was different from everyone else. Although the others could marry into the Kanani woman, but he was the king, Yehuda. He would have children who were going to be kings. He should have stayed away from Kananios on his own, even though the other Shvatim could marry them. So there's no problem. Rabbi Nechemya says, the other Shvatim, yeah, they married Kananios. But Yehuda should not have. And that's the problem, that he ended up marrying a Kanani man's daughter. That would be the problem over here. And that's why he tries switching it and says it can't be that it's a Kanani man's daughter. It's got to be a merchant. That's how the Nachlas Yaakov answers for Rashi, and how the Sifsei Chachamim answers for Rashi. That Rashi says over here, right, if it was a Kanani man's daughter, there would be a major, major issue, right? So therefore, because of that, it must be there was a merchant. Okay, so that's the idea behind it, even though the other Shvatim could have married, so to speak, a Kanani woman. The Ramban points out that they were able to marry a woman from many other nations. They could marry Moavi woman, Ammoni woman, Egyptians, Yishmaelim, the children of Keturah. It was only the Kanani they weren't allowed to marry, possibly, as we said above, because they were living in their land, or because, as we said above, that they were slaves to other nations. The exception was Shaul ben Akananis. Shaul ben Akananis is specifically pointed out that way. And even the Midrashim say that was a reference to Dina's son. So I have no problem with that necessarily. And by the way, that also shows that Rabbi Nechemya's answer is a weird answer. Rabbi Nechemya said they all married Kanani women. Well, if they did, then why was Shaul known as Shaul ben Akananis? What happened to everybody else? Why wasn't everybody ben Akananis? That's that. He says, even Rabbi Nechemya in the Medrash above, when Rabbi Nechemya says they married the Kanani woman, that doesn't mean they married actual Kanani woman. It's just arguing on Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that they married their sisters. Says Rabbi Nechemya, no, they married other people. It didn't mean literally Kananim. It means any nationalities that could have been from any of the surrounding nations. That's what it means over there. He was saying, yeah, they didn't marry their sisters. That was the point. I'm just taking you away from the sisters themselves. The Marsha says in Pesachim that seems Rabbi Yehuda held it was better for them to marry their own sisters, even though there's something the Torah in the future would forbid, than marry anyone from another nation. It's possible that's what they held when it came to that. Of course, you could say, look, the Torah Tamima, this is just big machlokes midrashim, right? But there's no reason to say machlokes midrashim unless you absolutely have to. Could be machlokes, Rabbi Nechemya holds to marry a Kanani woman, and this medrash that has a problem with Yehuda and says Yehuda must have married a merchant's daughter is machlokes with that medrash. But you never go with that if you don't have to. The likelihood is the Ramban. It didn't actually mean that they married Kanani woman. It meant people from outside. And that's why over here, this Kanani woman was also a merchant's daughter, and that's the idea. Or you go with Nachlas Yaakov, or you go with the Sifsei Chachamim. Logically, he says, it makes no sense they marry a Kanani woman. That means all their children would be half Kananim. And they were told not to leave any people in the land. As soon as they came there, it's Kanan. They were told, Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama, don't leave anybody alive. They had to destroy them when they came in. How could that be if they were all descended from Kanan? They were told to destroy the nation that they were from? It's gotta be that this guy was a well-known merchant from another land who lived among the Kananim, and that's why he was known as a Kanani. He was a merchant who lived in Eretz Kanan. That's why Yehuda married his daughter. He was well-known, a good person, says Ramban. That makes the most sense to me. Okay, that's that. So right now, we have all the opinions. Onklos, Yonas and Benaziel, Rashi, the Radak. We have the Rashbam, the Chizkuni, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. You have the Ramban that clearly says it. The Nachlas Yaakov and the Sifsei Chachamim that answer the Rashi from up above. But the Ibn Ezra brings this drush as well. And the Ibn Ezra, as usual, Kidarkei B'Kodesh, will argue on every single Medrash and every Gemara and say his own pshat. He says, yeah, that's a drush, but nonetheless, it makes more sense to say he married an actual Kanani woman. The Ramban adds on that according to this pshat, it's got to be that Yehuda's kids were so evil because they came from such questionable descent. They went in the ways of their mommy, right? And that the words Vayarsham Yehuda actually means that he saw how beautiful she was, similar to Shimshon looking at the beautiful woman of Pelishtim and marrying that. He desired her and married her only for that reason, which is a terrible reason to marry anyone. He never married just for looks. And therefore, his kids were killed. What an unbelievable line. Perhaps even Yaakov was upset about this when he was dying and suggested they should not marry into the families that had any strain of the Canaan within them, like Shaul ben Akhenatis or Shelah. It's an unbelievable thing. Most Midrashim say that Yaakov Vinu said, I don't want anyone from my grandsons carrying my bed because there may have been Canaanite descent over here. Here he's saying, no, I don't want any one of my grandsons marrying into the families of Shaul ben Akhenatis or Shelah because they were from Canaanios. Aaron Onan are dead already, right? But that's why, because I don't want them getting near the strain of the Canaanim. It's an unbelievable Ibn Ezra, if that's the way the Ramban understands it correctly. There's an opinion among the Baalei Tos that until now, Yaakov had made sure that the Shvatim did not marry Canaanim because, you know, he was with them and making sure he married them off to the right people. But now he was busy with the mourning for Yosef, the Avelos of Yosef. So the Shvatim did their own thing, and Yehuda ended up marrying the Canaanis woman. One proof of the Ibn Ezra is Divrei Hayamim. In Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Beis, Pasuk Gimel. Okay, that should be the easiest thing in the world. If you forget this after you learn it, I don't know what you can do. But in Aleph Beis Gimel, it says, Shlosha noldu lo mibas Shua Canaanis. Three people were born from the daughter of Shua, the Canaanite woman. Hakananis. She's not the daughter of a Canaanite man. She was actually a Canaanis woman, it says from Divrei Hayamim over there. That's a great proof to the Ibn Ezra that she was actually a Canaanis woman. That's also a real problem with the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Well, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh said, no, it's just a Canaanite man. It was never like that. But this is a straight out puzzle that says she was a Canaanis woman. The Targum there, however, says she was a Prakmatisa. Targum says that she herself was a merchant, maybe to get around this issue. So she was the daughter of a merchant man who was a merchant woman. That still doesn't go with the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim was saying it's direct. It's only him, not her, right? Only he was a merchant, not her, right? But over here, we're saying straight out that she was a merchant as well. But regardless, that's a problem with the Divrei Hayamim. That's a kasha on the Or HaChaim and a pretty good proof for the Ibn Ezra. The Gur Aryeh also, the Maral, he also goes with this. He says the opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah is in the Medrash. It's not just the Ibn Ezra that says they were married to Canaanite woman. Rabbi Nechemiah is the Ibn Ezra. And even though the Avos didn't want to marry Canaanios, that was before they were a real nation. Now they're a real nation. They've got so many people. Any Canaanite that joins them through marriage is batal to everyone else. Therefore, since this woman was willing to convert, this was perfectly fine for Yehuda to marry her. Rabbi Yehuda argues that no, everything, even the woman of the nation, had to stem from the Avos themselves. They had no choice but to marry their half-sisters. That's who they ended up marrying. But in the end, Rabbi Nechemiah, the opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah, how that works all together, what was going to be with him, it seems very clear, says the Gur Aryeh, that there were actual Canaanite women. So now we have the Ibn Ezra, the Gur Aryeh, and one of the Baalei Tosos that definitely says this over here. Rav Schwab says the greatest Chiddush of all time. I didn't see this idea anywhere else. There very well may have been Canaanim that lived outside of Eretz Canaan. We find that by Devorah and Shoftim, Yavin, Melech Canaan, was still alive, even though Yeshua had thoroughly defeated the Canaan and the Canaan were gone. But Yavin still lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. It seems that they lived near Lebanon, up north, as well as on the east side of the Jordan River, the land of the Chittim. When Yeshua entered Eretz Yisrael, they were only commanded to destroy the nations living in Eretz Canaan, but not the Canaanim living outside the land. There were Canaanim living outside the land that they were not told to destroy. They may not have been as evil, and therefore they could have been allowed to remain alive. There is a famous Ramban in this in Parshas Matos and Maaseh, but that's not for now. Chukas as well. But we're not going into that right now. It was the Canaanim in the land that were so evil that they couldn't marry into their families. And that's why Avram said, I cannot allow Yitzchak to get a wife when he's talking to Eliezer, Asher Anochi Yoshe Bekirbo, because there are Canaanim that I live among. I don't want him marrying woman of these Canaanim. Canaanim outside of Eretz Yisrael, I don't have a problem with, but these Canaanim. Rivka said, Mibnosa Aretz, from the daughters of this land, she had a problem with. She didn't have a problem with the Canaanim outside. The Canaanim outside the land probably did business with their cousins inside the land. So in essence, there were two Canaanim. The Canaanim living in the land of Canaan, and the Canaanim that did business with the people living in the land of Canaan, and that's the merchant, Shua, was of the latter people. He was a Canaanite man living outside of Eretz Yisrael, so it wasn't so bad. And he was a merchant as well who lived in Eretz Canaan once in a while, which is why Yehuda was allowed to marry his daughter. So his official land was outside of Eretz Canaan. He was from the tribes outside of Eretz Canaan, but he came into Eretz Canaan quite often in order to do business whenever he needed to do so. Targum Yonason says clearly he was megayer her before he married her, which possibly can answer our problem as well. Maybe the Avos wouldn't allow their children to marry a Canaanite woman who refused to convert, but this woman willingly converted. Maybe that's chop. but he was Megayer, says Targum Yonasan. He was Megayer her, and he made her into Giyoris. The Malbim argues that her name is not mentioned here since she never converted. That's why her name isn't here. She named her children evil names, which attributed to their early deaths. Only later, when Yehuda was able to take her away from her family, take her to Kziv, which is a different area, did he merit to convert her. And then she named her child Shayla, which was a solid name, and he survived. So again, in the original city, when she was with her parents still, she might not have worshipped Avodah Zarah, but she was not a convert, so to speak. And that's why her children ended up dying. But when she went to Kziv, then Yehuda converted her completely. That's when she named her child Shayla. Solid name. He survived. Everything went all good. Now, Chassam Sofer Gittin of Daf Tzadi asks, how is it possible that you can convert without a Beis Din? How can you make a Ger or a Gioris without a Beis Din over here? So the truth is, you could really ask the same question about the converts by Avraham or by Osnas and Yosef. How did Avraham Avinu made Gerim? There was no Beis Din. There was nobody else around. How did Osnas become converted by Yosef? Now, I know Osnas could have been the daughter of Dina, and then you don't have the problem whatsoever. But let's say Osnas was not the daughter of Dina. Let's say it was the daughter of Potiphar, which is straight out in the Pshat in the Pasuk. How did Yosef convert her? And if you say, well, maybe he didn't. Well, the Rambam says that he did, that they definitely converted. How is that possible? There's no Sanhedrin. There's no Beis Din. So it could be, in Sanhedrin Tazayim Elof, says the Chassam Sofer, we say that Moshe represented the 71 Zakenim of Sanhedrin, right? And since he represented the 71 Zakenim of Sanhedrin, it was as if Sanhedrin was making a decision. Maybe that would apply here as well. These great men, Avraham Avinu and Yosef HaTzadik, were the actual Beis Din. The Shechina was with them. Since the Shechina was with Avraham Avinu, the Shechina was with Yosef HaTzadik, even when he was in Golos. It could be they had the ability to be like Sanhedrin or Beis Din, and they could make Gerim on their own. But that was Yehuda's mistake. He assumed the Shechina was with him as well. He assumed that that Shechina was there, and therefore he could be Megayer this girl on his own. Right? He could do everything on his own. There was no problem. But the Shechina had left Yaakov Avinu, Yehuda, and his brothers when Yosef was sold. That was the problem over here. The Shechina had already left Yaakov, and that's why he didn't have Ruach HaKadosh, left Yehuda and the brothers. It went with Yosef down to Mitzrayim. That's why Mitzrayim was able to have food while no other land, every other land, went into hunger eventually. Because the whole pshat is that since Yosef was gone, the Shechina went with. Now there was problems. Now there would be issues over here. And that's the pshat. Yosef could be Megayer Osnas, but Yehuda could not be Megayer this lady, the daughter of Shua. This is the Yerida referred to in the beginning of the parsha. She may have stopped worshiping idols. She could have accepted Yehuda's ways, but she had never really converted, which is why Yehuda's children were punished when they did such something that was over there. Because of that result, we can't learn from Yehuda that we could do the same, which the people of Nehemiah did. People, by the times that Nehemiah married non-Jewish women, thinking if Yehuda did it, they could as well. But Yehuda had a thought process over here, thinking what he was supposed to do, and that was problematic because that wasn't right, and unfortunately it led to disastrous results for him and his children. Tiferes Yonasan says, the most amazing thing I've ever heard before in my life. It's such a grape shot. You not much want to punch someone in the face is such a grape shot. There's a strange medrash about David HaMelech, that Yishai was afraid that he wasn't kosher to marry a Jewish woman. Remember, Yishai was the son of Oved, who was the son of Boaz. Boaz had married Rusa Moavia, paskined that it was mutter to marry a Moavi woman. Some people say that since you can't marry a Moavi man, you can't marry a Moavi woman either. So Yishai ended up marrying, So Boaz ended up marrying Rus, the Moavia woman, right? And then died the next morning. She became pregnant with Oved. Oved gave birth to Yishai. Yishai always had a problem. Am I really kosher to marry a Jewish woman or not? He married a Jewish woman, Nitzeves Basa Doel, and he had 9 children. He had the 7 sons and 2 daughters that are mentioned throughout Navi and Shmuel Aleph. So he ended up having 9 children because of that, and that was that. But he wasn't sure. If I'm a Moavi man, in other words, from the Moavi nation that's not allowed to convert, then I'm not really allowed to marry a Jewish woman. So he said, well, then my children are technically mamzerim. They're not kosher to marry anybody they want because they're not fully Jews. How do you get rid of an issue of descent? How do you get rid of mamzerus, of somebody who messes over their kids? There's only one way to be able to do this. If a mamzer wants to have a kid that can marry a regular Jewish woman, he has to marry a shifcha. Unfortunately, it does not work by woman, but he has to marry a shifcha. And then the kid that's born is a slave because it goes after the mom, not by the father. And then you free that slave. And by freeing the slave, that kid is mutter lekahal. So here's what Yishai did. Yishai propositioned his shifcha. And he said to her, I want to be together with you.
in order to have a child. Now that Shivcha ran immediately to her master and said to Nitzavah's Basadol, look what your husband just said, right? He wants to get rid of it. What should I do? Nitzavah's Basadol said, I'll take your place. So Nitzavah's Basadol, right, who is now separated from Yishai, ended up going into the area which the Shivcha should have been in. The Shivcha was together with another man. She became pregnant. Nitzavah's Basadol became pregnant. Now Yishai thought that the Shivcha's child was going to be his. Nitzavah's Basadol, she became pregnant and nobody knew who the kid was. David HaMelech was born and no one had any clue who it was. That's why when Shmuel and Avi came, he said, where are your sons? They brought out seven. And then he said, after we went through all seven and said, none of them are the king, he said, do you have any other sons? And Yishai's like, well, there's one other guy. He didn't even know about that other guy. Nitzavah's Basadol stepped up and said, yeah, David HaMelech is yours. She had never told Yishai what had happened over here because she never wanted him going back to the Shivcha and doing it again. So that's the reason why she never told him. But that's the pshat. Yishai, in order to be Matahir, his sons, wanted to be together with the Shivcha in order to free the slave afterward. Maybe Yehuda had the same issue. Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, which means the children would be considered mamzerim for being involved in a relationship of arayas, and the children would have a problem. Maybe the children wouldn't be able to marry anybody that you could. So he specifically married a girl who was a Kenani. He specifically married a girl from Kenani who were avadim, made as avadim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to free his children after he was together with this Eved Kenanis woman, Shifcha Kenanis. And then after freeing the children, he allowed them to marry whomever they wanted to. That was the whole purpose. And he freed Er and freed Onan and freed Shelah. Maybe that's the reason why all of the Shvatim married Kenanios, says Rabbi Yonos and Aibshitz. For this very purpose, so their children would not be considered Mamzerim. That's why they all married Kenanios, on purpose, in order to free their kids, to make sure there was no Chashash of Mamzeris. That's Rabbi Yonos and Aibshitz. That's possibly the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. But not to be outdone, Rev Wolfson says the most amazing thing that I've ever heard in my life, the greatest word of all time. Even if you say that the word Kenani is referring to a merchant, why would you use that word? Why is the word Kenani referring to a merchant? So he explains, the seven nations of Eretz Canaan connect to the seven spheros of the Klipos. Now, although we don't know exactly what these things are, in Kedusha, we know they are Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchus. That's what it refers to over here. Just like there's seven in Kedusha, there's seven in Tuma as well. Now, each one of those seven spheres of Klipos, those seven spheres of Tuma, the shells of Tuma, as we call them, have seven nations that are opposite those seven. So in other words, each one is different. There's Chesed in Tuma, Gevura in Tuma, and each one is a nation of the seven nations of Canaan. Canaan specifically is opposite the Midah of Chesed. Now, the way it works is, whatever is true by Kedusha is the exact opposite in the Klipos world. If Chesed rules over Gevura in Kedusha, right? Because we see that Hashem wanted to make the world in Gevura, but he made it with Chesed instead. That Avram Avinu in the Akedah was the Baal Chesed who shechted Yitzchak, or wanted to shecht Gevura, right? That's how it works in Kedusha. Chesed rules over Gevura and Kedusha. But in the other side, and the side of Klipos, of Tuma, Gevura rules over Chesed. That's the idea over here. Thus, Chesed on that side is known as Kenani. What's Kenani? They're machnia themselves to the level of Gevura. The word machnia means they bend themselves over. Kenani means to bend yourself over to somebody else. That means that Chesed, which is Kenani, they are machnia themselves. They're, by definition, they are below the level of Gevura. Now, what's the difference between both sides? That's the manner of Chesed that happens. In Kedusha, Chesed means you're doing something selfless without you gaining anything at all. You're not thinking about yourself. You want to do it for the other person. In Tuma, Chesed means you have ulterior motives. The Mashpia ends up being the Mushpa, gaining the most from his giving. Thus, a merchant is known as a Kenani. A Kenani wants to sell. He's showing off his wares to someone else. But really, it's all there to make a buck. The more that he praises an object and impresses upon others what he has, the more he wants to make from it. For that reason, a Sochar, a merchant, is really a scharchar. That's where the word comes from. A circle that goes around and around, because a merchant takes it right back for himself. It's going right back to him. So the definition of a merchant is someone that is filled with tuma dike chesed. A chesed with ulterior motives, with another reason, gaining by giving to somebody else. Thus, we go to the chesed of tuma, and that's called a kenani. Therefore, a kenani is a socher, is a merchant. That's how Rav Wolfson says it. Amazing. The Alshech asks why he mentions Shu over here, but we have no idea what his daughter's name was. But by Tamar, we see her name, but we don't know where her father was. He says the whole parsha was the beginning of the times of Mashiach. Had Yehuda not married this non-Jewish woman, he would have been successful to bring about Mashiach in a much quicker and easier fashion. We don't know how, but that's what would have happened had Yehuda done it properly and not married this Bas Kananis. Now that he married Bas Shua, everything was ruined. Aaron Onan weren't good enough. They had to die so their neshamas could come back a second time as Peretz and Zerach through Tamar in order to give through the secret of Yibam to allow for Malchus Beis David to be brought about. That meant that Aaron Onan had to die at a very young age and that David HaMelech almost died as a baby. All that happened because the Alshech says, because Yehuda wanted to marry this non-Jewish woman. Now, Rav Wolfson says this was a Yerida on his part, but he knew it. He purposely did it. He thought this Yerida was necessary for the best thing for the rest of Klal Yisrael. He knew Gullus was starting. He assumed that we'd need someone to go into the Makom Tumah, into the area of Tumah, pull out the Kedusha they could find there, and make it easier to survive among the other nations. So Yehuda took it upon himself. I can do this, he said. I'm going to marry into the other nations. I'm going to pull out the Kedusha from them. I'm going to show you how even Gullus could be awesome and how a person can improve even through Gullus. And he did it on purpose, going into the Makom Tumah. But he was wrong. Only Yosef HaTzadik could be that great. Only Yosef HaTzadik could go into a Makom Tumah and pull out the Kedusha. Yehuda thought he could do it. He was the man to be able to do it, but he was wrong. Yosef HaTzadik can do it. No one else can do it like what Yosef HaTzadik was able to do. In fact, there's a Medrash that says just like this. The Medrash Gadol says a dog walked by an Avela. He sniffed it, and then he walked away. An Avela, a dead corpse. A lion that walked by and ate it. So everyone laughed and said, the dog rejected it. Why would the lion eat what a dog rejected? Esav saw the evil of the daughters of Canaan and decided to marry someone else. And Yehuda comes along and married one? Because he tried to do it correctly and it didn't work. The Igret Akala says he was fooled by the name. Shua has the same letters as Esav. So he thought that one was opposite the other. In order to defeat Esav, he would need the power of Shua. It didn't work. Since the child who would eventually defeat Esav actually came from Tamar. But that child was a Gilgal of the child born through Shua's daughter. So there could have been something that he was right about. So he was a friend of Chira, stands for Chirus, as in freedom. Adulam is Adolam, for Mashiach to be there forever. That's what Yehuda saw and understood that this Mashiach ben David is going to come from him. And he assured him, it assured him that he was making the right decision. Unfortunately, it was not the right decision. All right, have a good Shabbos, everyone.